What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Paul DeJoe is the co-founder and COO of Mudwater. In this conversation, we talk about using their recurring revenue to actually finance the future growth of their business in a non-dilutive way using PIPE. We also talk about the fact that he holds Bitcoin on their balance sheet and that he's a prolific angel investor. I really enjoy talking to operators like Paul because it gives you an insight not only into how they build their own businesses, but how they think about evaluating founders and businesses that they invest in. I really enjoyed this conversation with Paul. I hope you guys enjoy this one as well. Before we get into it, though, I first want to talk about our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by PIPE. Crypto is all about giving the power back to the people, and our sponsor PIPE is doing that in a big way. PIPE is the world's first trading platform that allows you to trade recurring revenue streams for upfront capital. And with PIPE's new API, companies with recurring revenue can build seamless embedded financing options into their platforms. One of the most interesting uses for PIPE's new API right now is Compass Mining's Mine Now, Pay Later, which powers payment plans on Bitcoin mining hardware so more miners can start or scale with a smaller upfront investment. Whether you're looking for mining hardware or scaling any business with recurring revenue, check out PIPE to access growth capital with no loans, no dilution, no restrictive covenants or warrants, just growth on your terms. And right now, Pomp Podcast listeners can access tens of thousands of dollars, even millions, fee-free for 12 months. Whether you are a Bitcoin mining company looking to enable financing for your customers, or a SaaS, DTC, or any business that has recurring revenue, sign up at pipe.com/pomp. Again, pipe.com/pomp to start trading today.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
Paul DeJoe, who's going to be joining us. Now, Paul has a very interesting background. He's the co-founder and COO of Mudwater. He is a Bitcoin investor, angel investor. He has an Uber rating of 4.96, which if somebody is telling me their Uber rating, there's a story there. We're going to figure out what happened with the 0.04, what's going on. He studied finance, Drexel University. He said, shout out to alum Lex Friedman, a.k.a. the Monotone Magic Mike. That's pretty good. And I believe that he played hockey and baseball at Newman University. He's a pro hockey in Italy and Belgium. And he was voted the friendliest kid at Canfield Middle School. It's a three-way tie between him and two other friendly kids. He has three failed startups, two failed special ops tryouts. And he has one Spirit of the YMCA award. It's from Youngstown, Ohio. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul DeJoe. Paul, how are you?
What up, boys? How you doing?
I know that you think that this is all hilarious because I don't think anyone's ever given me enough background information to know that they won the Spirit of the YMCA award. How do you win that when you're younger?
I don't know. Just a friendly guy, I guess.
Well, we know that because you were also voted in a three-way tie at Canfield Middle School for the friendliest kid of the year.
Yeah, got to keep it light.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear about the Uber rating.
What's what's going on with the 4.96 Uber rating?
The only challenge I had there with not getting a perfect score was my friend threw up one time in the back of it. Otherwise, I'd have a perfect score.
It's not even your fault.
No, it wasn't even on me.
That scares me because I just checked mine and mine's at 4.58 and I've never thrown up in a car. that seems pretty low for Uber. I'm a nice guy.
I'm not checking mine.
Yeah, I feel like that's like alarmingly low.
I've been with you two fools and Ubers. I'm definitely not checking mine. All right, so let's start maybe with to have a little bit of fun first. So you have two failed special ops tryouts. Was this for the Army Special Forces, or like what was the thought process here?
No, there's actually a spec ops unit that's a reserve unit in Tucson, yes. Arizona. And which you probably know about. And I thought, you know, that's really exciting. You have to keep a day job. but you get to like get called when you're needed. And I just fell in love with the pararescue mission in Credo. So yeah, I was in the pipeline there for like 4 years, but you know, 2 times I failed the swim time.
Swimming got you. See, yeah. This is, people don't know this about a lot of these special operations, either tryouts or actual like training programs, is that you could be the baddest of the baddest running, lifting, shooting, moving, communicate. And then they just toss you in the water and they're like, good luck. And it's not just like swim to the end of the pool. It's like, let us tie your hands and your feet together and then flip over underneath the water a couple of times and then bob up and down. Oh, and by the way, we're going to do that until you pass out. And then we're going to resuscitate you and do it again. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I was good at the water con. I actually liked that. It's just like swimming a mile was so boring that I never trained for it. My swim time for the mile was... I thought I was going to do it twice and it just didn't work either time. So they told me don't come back. I said, all right.
All right. Hey, allowed for Mudwater, which give us kind of a quick overview of Mudwater as a business.
Yeah. So we branded as a coffee alternative. It was never really intended to be a business. My friend and co-founder Shane was drinking this concoction on his own for a couple of years. He was in the Silicon Valley startup space where it's hustle culture. And he's also a fine artist and painting. And he went over to India on an art residency, fell in love with chai, came back to the States and was experimenting with mushrooms and adaptogens. Tim Ferriss, Joe Rogan were talking about these things. And so he made his own concoction and then just decided one night after he took mushrooms that he was going to throw a website up. And he sent it to me and it was beautiful. And so I was like, let's do this, man. I want to help out. And we started it. The testimonials were insane. I had enough money in my bank to invest in a house. It was going to be my first house, but I decided to put it into Mud. And then we went out and raised $1 million in the first year. And we're 4 years in to the company almost. And we have 161,000 monthly subscribers. It's crazy.
And so when you think about this, I wonder if the chai was the value. Like, so I went to India in 2015, maybe. And I got to say, when I was in India, they have coffee shops. They have American, you know, kind of all the brands, etc. But we went a couple of times, and I think we were in a place called Jaipur, which is not exactly like the tourist destination of India, but right. But we went there. It's probably my favorite place in India that we went. And there was people on the side of the road selling what was the equivalent of like a little plastic bag, and some of them had water, and then some of them had mud water, right? I mean, it's basically what it looks like. It was chai. Yeah. And I got to tell you, when we drank that stuff, you're wired for like 17,000 days in a row. Like I don't know what was in there, but you drink it and you're just on another planet. And not like from like a hallucinogenic standpoint, whether it's the caffeine, like whatever's in that thing was next level. And I literally remember talking to my brother who was with me at the time. And we were like, dude, we should bring this to the US. Like, this would be dope. And so like, you guys literally took that general concept and have figured out how to do that with Mudwater.
Yeah, we added some adaptogenic mushrooms to it, some turmeric, some cacao. So the flavor profiles, kind of our own concoction, but it has our own unique signature on it. And it was never intended to be a business. It was just something that we were drinking to get off coffee, to kind of reduce anxiety or have a more kind of steady energy flow. And when we started seeing testimonials from giving it to our friends, and then originally like just selling it to like the first 30 customers, the testimonials were insane. And it was like, these were people that were trying to get off coffee because they didn't like the crash or they were drinking too much, but they all kind of cited the same thing. They were dreaming again. They had sustained energy across the day. They didn't really have a crash. And then when we were like, wow, maybe this really is a business. So
is that the thought process, is that this is better than coffee, but you still have like the energy and like basically forget Mudwater for a second. Like, what is the pitch of chai versus coffee? I drink a lot of coffee. I drink 2 of these a day pretty much, which like I'm probably going to die in like 2 years. But what's the general thought process of drinking chai instead of coffee?
So we all have this gene variant called the CYP1A2 gene, and it determines how we metabolize caffeine.
Okay.
about half of the country metabolizes it twice as slow. And so you have 70% of our customers that come to our site are trying to drink less caffeine. And so our pitch is that you don't crash in the afternoon. And if you just monitor your sleep cycle, your sleep score on and off coffee, you'll see a dramatic difference. And so you'll get into that REM cycle sleep. You won't have as much caffeine to metabolize throughout the day or later at night. And so we really don't need to like pitch a whole lot. It's like, try it, track your sleep. If you feel better, great. If you don't, you know, we'll support your morning ritual, whatever it is.
So if you think about this, the average milligrams, I think, of a cup of coffee is what, like 120 milligrams, something like that?
You're between 100 and 200, depending on where you get it and the size, but a Starbucks like pipe place or something's like 120 to 200. Yeah.
Okay. And so a shot of espresso, if I remember correctly, is like 80 or 90, something like somewhere in that range. You guys don't know about the science of coffee like I know. Cause I went and I looked cause I wanted to understand how much caffeine am I drinking? And then I got real nervous when they were like, oh, you should never drink more than like 400 milligrams of coffee in a given day. And so I was like, all right, well, this is basically two coffees plus time, you know, times two. If I drink two of them a day, oh shit. Like I'm pushing up against 400 milligrams. And so the hard part is if you start to not drink as much coffee, you crack, like you're just like, yo, this sucks. And so you're basically addicted, right? To some degree. And so the promise of kind of chai tea, but also of Mudwater is like, hey, you don't have that variation. And I'm assuming that it has a huge impact because if you drink coffee later in the day, that's really where you start screwing up your sleep. Is that the thought process?
Yeah, it depends on that gene variant too. I think, you know, a good, what else we saw, which was we didn't anticipate was, there's still a black tea leaf in chai, which has a little caffeine. And so normally people that were getting off coffee, they'd have this crash or this migraine from withdrawal, but moving into mud allowed them to still get that little bit of caffeine. So to your point, 120 to 200 milligrams of caffeine, mud is about a seventh that. So we have like around between 15 and 30 milligrams in a serving. So it's much less. And if you transition to that, you know, you're not getting the withdrawal symptoms. You're taking down caffeine quite a bit and you're getting more sustained energy.
All right. We got to talk about other stuff. I'm about to buy some Mudwater right now. I'll let you know how this goes because I'm interested in this now. If we start thinking about the business itself, what metrics can you share with us about the business in terms of how big is this? How do I think about employees, locations? What can you share?
Yeah, we're kind of an open book. We're about to be 4 years old in May. First year, full year in revenue, we did $3 million. Second year, we did 17. Last year, we did 47. This year, we're projecting to do 74. We have 161,000 active monthly subscribers. 21% of those are on bulk plans. So people try this once and they're like, cool, I want a year subscription of this right now. We've got, HQ's in Venice, California, but we're a distributed team of 22 FTEs. We use quite a few contractors, that are kind of like family for us, but yeah, the full-time team is 22.
All right. So if we think about this, basically what you've figured out is you've figured out how to take the idea of coffee and kind of a daily habit, you transition it to something that's more healthy. And then you've overlaid that with a subscription business that either people are buying it weekly, monthly, or annually. Is that kind of a fair categorization?
Pretty close. Yeah. Or all you can get a demand one off whenever you want.
Okay. And you said 3 million in the first year, 17 million in the second, 47 in the third. Last year, third year. And then this year, you think you guys are going to do 75 million, give or take?
Yeah, around that.
Where are the customers coming from? Are you guys just like ballers at online marketing or like what, that's pretty big growth for a subscription business like this.
Yeah. I think we are pretty good at digital acquisition. We're 99% B2C, but you know, this message just really kind of resonated with a lot of people. We intentionally branded it as a coffee alternative and nobody else was really saying that. And so it enabled us to kind of be anchored in a lot of customers' minds of, it's actually not a tea. If we said we were a chai, I don't think we would have generated that many customers, but we specifically said we were a coffee alternative and we had this 0-1 product market fit thing happening where a lot of people that were coming to our site heard this coffee alternative idea for the first time from us. And they were like, oh, I need less coffee in my life. And so we got lucky in a lot of ways in kind of hitting product market fit. And the messaging just really resonated with a lot of our digital ads.
Yeah, it's super smart positioning, right? If you really think about like something like this, the positioning may be one of the most important things because the way you position is what people are going to go tell their friends. And it's like, oh, I stopped drinking coffee, I drink mud water. And of course, that's going to spread like wildfire. Did you guys raise money or how have you guys funded the business?
Totally, yeah. We did a safe note in the first year for like $1 million. And then we did a seed round and then an A round. And then we're also augmenting that fundraising with debt financing from Pipe, which is a real service.
What was the total amount of like equity capital you think you raised? Ballpark.
We did about 14 million in equity.
So 14 million raised in equity, you know, 75 million in revenue in the first 4 years. That's pretty damn good, right? From a capital efficiency standpoint. So the folks over at Pipe, they introduced me to you, and we're going to be doing these kind of highlights of businesses that use Pipe. I've known Harry Hurst, the CEO, for quite a while, and I'm fascinated by this idea. So you raised 14 million in equity capital. But you also are getting access to non-dilutive capital via Pipe. And my understanding of this is given that you guys have that subscription revenue, that means that you can project out, you know, hey, here's what we're going to do this year with whatever the historical churn has been, et cetera. And they'll essentially advance you that capital, securing it with your future cash flows on that subscription model. Is that accurate?
Spot on.
Okay. And so how have you guys thought about how much do you take there? Do you think about like a ratio or like how do you think about kind of managing selling of future cash flow for the capital up front and what you're able to do with it?
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about Pipe is they kind of really are this partner that's programmatic. They know how to de-risk the cost and the amount that we should have because they need paid back too. So they're not going to overextend themselves. And the way we thought about it was, okay, where's our low cash mark going to be if we're projecting out, a month, 12 months out. And we don't really want to go near that. And so, and then we do want to augment Pipe with some more equity too. And so there's this balance of let's not get close to our low cash mark. Let's always kind of have 12 to 18 months of runway. And then let's look at a weighted average cost of capital. Equity is really expensive. Debt has this interest component. And so it's really a balance of those two things.
Got it. And so when you think about the use of that capital, is it all just pouring into marketing? So you basically say, hey, look, our future cash flow, we're going to go ahead and essentially pull on that, accelerate it up to the future accelerate it to now. We're going to grab that money. We're going to use that for marketing, which then just drives more revenue growth in the future.
It's not all marketing. I think when you get it all in the same pool, a lot of it does go to marketing. But I think what we're excited anytime we raise, we're not really raising for marketing. We're raising for innovation pipeline. I think what was really exciting about Pipe was when you're a growing business, you have these other challenges, which is supply chain and ordering bigger and bigger and ingredient POs. And you don't want to go into your cap table because it's to use cash or dilute yourself. Because the product is de-risked, you don't want to raise equity to go make a bigger purchase order. And so that's what Pipe was used for originally, was like we were growing, but we didn't feel like it was worth diluting ourselves because we felt like we had de-risked the business and we had product market fit. And Pipe came along and like, okay, we can handle these larger POs and grow without dipping into our cap table.
Yeah. What is the rate of the capital? Like, so if you get $100 worth of future cash flow, what is it like? You basically get like $90 to $94 today, something like that?
Yeah, they have this thing called a bid price. And so it's basically saying like, if for every dollar, we're going to give you 95 or 96 cents. And then recommendation, if you use Pipe, is you do want to model this out and use like the XIRR function in Excel so you can see the actual APR. The APR ends up being like around 8.2 to 9%. But you literally click a button in Pipe and it goes into your account the next day. So you're talking about like how much of an asset you avoid going to raise elsewhere. There's no covenants. There's no extra fees. There's no there's nothing funny behind it. You click a button and it's done. We've done it 3 times and it's so seamless.
Yeah, I've got the daily newsletter and I piped it. I guess is a terminology that we're supposed to use these days. Like you can Uber somewhere, you can pipe the revenue, which I see Harry tweeting about all the time. But when I did that, I used it and I bought Bitcoin. Thankfully, before one of the major run ups, and part of it, frankly, was I was doing it because I wanted to just see, hey, how does this work, and it'd be kind of a cool thing to do. Two was I wanted to buy more Bitcoin, but I think I was blown away by just how simple it was, right? Mm-hmm. And usually in these situations, when it's like a newer type product, I usually am like, all right, I know who the team is. God forbid I get stuck or you know, don't have the best experience. Like I can reach out to them. They can kind of, you know, white glove service, help me through. I don't have to ask them for anything. Like it was just worked, right? And I remember just being like, damn, who the hell's on the other side of this, right? Like, are they getting me, right? You know, as I got to know more about the business, like it was pretty cool to see, like there's like legit people and organizations on the other side who are buying this and they just have a different time duration, right? They can say, hey, look, we'll just wait for that capital to come in and we'll take the difference.
Yeah, this is not like an unprecedented marketplace experience. Like toll roads are very famous for the reliability of the fixed income payments and their funding pension funds, or that that trade-off of what happens in toll roads, who you sell those payments to is a relationship that's actually not unprecedented. It's pretty simple and seamless.
Got it. And then I guess the only other thing is just like, as you guys think about the world kind of evolving, like what are some of the things that you're seeing either in terms of trends of your customers or in the way that you run the business? Like, obviously, you know, you're distributed. So like that seems to be a thing that's become much more popular now. But are there other things that you're like, man, we were not doing this 2 years ago, but we are doing it now. And this has been really big, or our customers are doing something different?
We think about our team a lot. It's just like our best asset. And one of the challenges that you have from being remote is that, we also have like very independent, knowledge workers that work really hard, and you do have to kind of monitor them for burnout. You have to like make sure they're taking breaks and they're taking time because, the work-life balance starts to get blurry. And so we started implementing just like really progressive benefits within the company. So like we have every other Friday off, we have this kind of unlimited vacation policy. We have bonuses around health and wellness. So like if you've meditated or journaled 66 days in a row out of the quarter, we pay you a bonus. And so that was a big thing that we kind of caught earlier, and we're still continuing to tweak those things, because when you have like A players that just, they're really excited to work, you do have to find time to in areas where you can pull them off the project or make sure they're taking breaks. And so we're constantly looking at burnout as a concern, especially in a remote first culture. And when you have A players like that. So that's something that kind of caught us off guard. It was like, well, we really have to do our job in taking care of our best assets and making sure they're getting enough break from the company.
Got it. And then the thing that most people will be very interested to hear about is you guys have Bitcoin on your balance sheet, but Is it only Bitcoin? Like, do you have zero cash on the balance sheet? Or what is going on with the Mudwater balance sheet over here?
I tweeted that earlier and I was like, yeah. And I was like, wait, we do have some other things on our balance sheet. And when I said only Bitcoin, we don't have Ethereum or anything else. We just hold.
Got it. So the only digital currency on the balance sheet is Bitcoin. Yeah. All right. Okay. And why did you guys do that? What's the thought process there?
Well, I don't have a reason. I don't have a good reason not to. I'm close to my 1,000 hours in, and I'm like, show me a different alternative. Like, I'm not that excited that I have to think about hedging for 25% inflation and supply chain. But you know, you don't have an option. You're kind of desperate a little bit, and then at the same time, the principles and fundamentals are there. So, for me, it was an easy decision. I wish I could buy more. I had to agree in our Series A docs that I wouldn't buy any more, though. So I'm kind of capped, but
on a percentage basis, or like literally they didn't want you to go buy anymore.
They just said no more. And, but I think everybody's kind of coming around to it. You saw Pipes deal with Compass, which I think is brilliant. So yeah, we've been exploring buying miners as a way to being a 35% APY. And you have to, like, you're just straight up losing money with what sits in your treasury if you're not outpacing inflation. So we did it as a hedge. We did it as I did it because I'm a fan of it. I understand it. I appreciate it. I'm bullish on it. So I did enough work to say, I think this is de-risked and you should do it. So pull the trigger a couple years ago.
So I don't want to get you in trouble here. So you just tell me, say, Pomp, shut the hell up if I ask a question I'm not supposed to. But in the Series A docs, you had to agree no more buying Bitcoin. But my big brain, I think I just heard, is that there's nothing that says you can't buy Bitcoin miners and earn Bitcoin. Is that right? I just trying to figure out how the world works. You know, I just sit here, ask stupid questions and get smarter every day. Joe, John, what questions do you guys have?
My question would just be around future growth, right? I think everyone sees the headline numbers that you mentioned previously, which was going from $3 million in revenue to potentially projected $74 million this year. How do you get in your mind to $150 to $300 to $500 million in revenue? Like, what are the steps to get there for you guys?
Yeah, innovation pipeline is for sure something that we're excited about. We just launched our second hero SKU, which was a rest blend. And when we did that, we saw kind of our AOV climb. We saw our retention climb. And it's just kind of speaking to, I think, the customer base that's really starting to resonate with our brand and our authenticity, how we select ingredients. And we're really excited about two more hero SKUs over the next coming years. So that's one. And then I think intelligent segmentation on how we do acquisition. So we're 99% D2C. We just launched on Amazon a couple of weeks ago. We're not in international shipping yet. We're not in a Whole Foods or a Target or a Wegmans. And I think those locations are inevitable. We're growing our retail locations with cafes very slowly and methodically. So I think between innovation pipeline, intelligent segmentation of new customer markets, Amazon, and then big box retailers, we'll get there.
Paul, on the back of that, how did you guys go from $3 million? Like, was it all brick and mortar? Like, how do you basically take a business that seemed bootstrap at the time to projecting $74 million in sales in 3-4 years?
Yeah, we get this question a lot, and there is definitely this element of, I think, charisma with the brand. Is like, we weren't trying to make this a company, and so a lot of the first messaging was like, we didn't really expect much of it, and it allowed us to be kind of raw and authentic. Like in our first unboxing experience, we had a sticker that said "Fuck your coffee," and that was photographed like I think 100,000 times, and we ran an Instagram ad that Shane filmed at his kitchen table in 5 minutes before he was going to work one day. Before he quit that job. And it's just said, we're not mad at coffee. We're just disappointed. And that single ad of a spinning tin or empty glass, a glass jar with mud in it generated $4 million in revenue for us within 18 months. And so it had something to do with product market fit. We didn't see us like competing with anyone in this coffee alternative framing. And then a lot of our messaging and copy was just like really resonating with people, and it was shareable. Our unboxing experience was also something we invested a lot in. And that was where you saw a lot of these photos and videos and people kind of shifting to, showing their own personal brand through what they were consuming. And when the packaging looks good and when the unboxing looks good and it's kind of cheeky messaging, you get a lot of free advertising from people sharing it. So that's a lot of the reason we were able to see an early spike in revenue.
Yeah, it's creating that experience that they want to share with others.
Yeah, yeah.
I officially just bought my mud water. I will say, though, I paid full price, one. Two is I would screenshot, but it's got my email, my order number. All that. I don't want to dox myself here. But I got 30-serving starter kit. And then it comes with a frother. Explain this real quick. Then I'm just going to be super self-serving to myself. What's going on with this frother? Yeah, what is this thing and how does this work?
This was like a thing that we when we first started drinking mud, we were just stirring it up or shaking it. And then a customer introduced us to this concept. They're like, I just use this and it helps displace the ingredients better. So all of our ingredients are 100% natural. There's no like gums or binding agents. And so you do get a little sediment at the bottom, which we like, but a lot of customers were like, yeah, it's better if you use something like this. And we looked at it and then we ran a test with some earlier cohorts, the people that had a frother for free versus the people that didn't, we retained them 10% more. And so like, oh, this pays for itself. This should be free. And so we started including them in the starter kits.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. This is why I love our audience. Is someone just said, do you need a mattress? If I'm going to be buying your coffee alternative, maybe you need to buy a mattress because one of our sponsors is 8Sleep. Okay. We talked a little bit earlier about like the impact of caffeine on sleep, but like what do you do from a sleep perspective? Do you have, like, are you a health nut and you've got like some special sleep schedule or like routine, or what's going on there?
I'm an 8Sleep customer, and the Woo! Thing is,
he already doesn't need one. He already got one.
Insane. It's like cheating. And, but I love getting up at 4 AM. I just naturally have these cortisol spikes at weird times, and one's at 4 AM. So I'm up at 4 AM every day without an alarm. I love to do a workout, have some mud, and then, hit the 8Sleep no later than 10 PM or I'm screwed. But that's my routine.
Got it. Okay. And when you do this, 4 AM, are you like working out at home or do you like go to the gym? Like what's going on there?
That's usually when I do my best work. So I'll walk the dog and then, I need like an hour and a half of nobody asking me for anything. And that's when I'll do the four or five things that, are most important for the day. Then I hit the gym.
Yeah.
Usually boxing or something like that.
I am Mateo, CEO of 8Sleep. He and I have talked a number of times about my entire life. I would wake up and go work out. Like that was the first thing I did. And there's a lot of studies that are coming out now that suggest actually the thing you should do is you should do your highest quality cognitive work when mm-hmm. you wake up, because that's when you're kind of most awake, most alert, you know, intelligent, et cetera, and then go work out. So you still do it in the morning, but to your point, you know, whether it's an hour and a half, 2-3 hours, whatever, actually getting the work done may be a better use of your time and kind of more productive than just go work out first and then do the work.
I definitely recommend that, at least trying it. It's a great feeling to kind of feel like you're done with the hardest things of with your day at 7:30 AM. And then you can go enjoy a workout. And then there's always fires that happen every day. That's just natural at a startup. Like your default situation is failure and fires. So like get the hardest things done that you need to get done early in the morning so that you can be proactive and be there for your team if a fire comes up.
Yeah, I think that's right. By the way, your team is already part of my favorite teams we've ever interacted with, because after I said that I paid full price, now these smart asses are sending me discount codes saying, well, tell everyone else they can use code POMP for 25% off. Like, yes. Thanks, fellas and ladies. It would have been nice if you had given me the discount code. But that, so what are they saying here? They said there's a 25% discount off of Mudwater if they use code POMP for the next 72 hours. So anyone who's listening, watching, whatever, if you go use the code POMP on Mudwater's website, you get 25% off in the next 72 hours. So I may be going broke because I'm going to be spending a ton of money on Mudwater, but you all can save 25%. You're welcome. Don't say we never did anything for you guys. All right. I think, Paul, the only other thing that I would love to know about is just like, what's your future outlook of Bitcoin? Like, obviously you're bullish. Your investors literally making you not buy more. How do you think this all plays out over the coming years?
Yeah, I stopped like thinking about price and just really thinking about infrastructure. I think Brad Gerstner like hit it spot on, which is like, you know, he follows where the engineers are going. It was Google, then it was Facebook. Now it's, you know, the crypto industry and even mining. And so when you see that infrastructure, when you see the fundamentals, when you see hash rate climbing, when you see Lightning Network growing, when you see the applications of where you can start to use this, when you see nation states adopting it, to me, it's just kind of a matter of time before you see the price spike from the fundamentals being checked off. But I'm just a fan of it. It's just really fun to explore. And so I remain bullish on it, but mostly for the fundamentals. And I really don't try to speculate on price too much because I have in the past, and it's not a fun place to be.
Yeah. I used to do my like periodic price prediction. And the problem is that you're right a couple of times and then you think you're a genius. And then when you're wrong, then you're just like, all right, I'm back to just, I have no clue what's going to happen. But my 30 year time horizon, hopefully I'll still be alive in 30, 40 years, will outlast most of the short-term speculators. And that probably is going to be a pretty good position to be in.
Oh yeah, man.
All right. Where can we send people to find you on the internet?
You know, if you're a startup and or have a startup idea, I love helping startups and founders. It's kind of like my, I don't know, I find a lot of purpose in it. So if you've got an idea that you want to have de-risked or I can help in any way, just email me. It's paul@mudwtr.com.
All right, man. I love somebody who comes on, gets me to buy Coffee Alternative, and then shows his email for deal flow. Like, you are an expert at the internet, my friend. and you two got anything else?
No, thanks for coming on.
Right. I'm excited to try Mudwater.
Are you going to buy some?
Yeah. I'm going to use the code.
Now that I got the discount. Yeah, now that I got the
discount. Use pump. This is nonsense. All right, buddy. Sounds good. We appreciate you coming on. Thank you. And we'll definitely do this again in the future.
Oh, man. Good to see you guys. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to try to transition to get a new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to pompscryptocourse.com. We've developed a curriculum with the top teams across the industry. It's a 3-week intensive training program with over 50 events packed into that 3-week time period. Go to pompscryptocourse.com to learn more, and I'll meet you guys for the next episode.